Ned, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Pleasure.
How have you found the tour so far?
It's easy to say it's exceeded expectations, because that's what people say about bike races, and they kind of trot it out at every occasion. And most of the time, it's not necessarily genuinely meant, but it'd be hard to say otherwise on this bike race. I mean, you know, perhaps the organisers, in their hearts of hearts, you know, knew that this would be a success. Otherwise, they wouldn't have had the faith that they've obviously shown in it. But I didn't, and
okay.
I really didn't think it would be embraced to the extent it has been by the public as quickly as it has been. By, I have to say, members of the national media as well, who've been extremely supportive of it. And most significantly, by the riders. And I think it's been, you know, most of the success of the race really has been down to their attitude. I think they've offered a really thrilling spectacle that's put to bed a lot of the myths or worries or concerns about the strength and depth of women road racing. You know, certainly, because it's not on the television very much. It's not seen very much. Many people know very much about, unfortunately, and so certain preconceptions have arisen around it, which I think this race has disproved to a larger or lesser extent.
I have to say, it's quite interesting kind of seeing the comments coming from people that watch normal cycling or men's cycling
normal cycling.
I know it's a really bad thing to say, isn't it?
There's me being all careful with my terminology, and you just use the word normal.
Damn! All right, women's cycling and men's cycling.
Yes.
Those that watch men's cycling, I say normal because that's what you see on TV,
and as you pointed out.
But to see the comments from those that watch that cycling and the difference, or not difference, actually, to women's racing and how exciting it is.
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of people have pointed out the average speed, but when actually you put it down on paper...
Listen, I mean, what is it, high 30s in most days? Yesterday on that fast stage in the Felixstowe, it was over 42. And, you know, you need to talk to the people who understand bike racing a lot better than me, because they're right in the thick of it. The moto guys who have done 101 races every calendar year, they'll tell you quite how close these speeds are to if you like men's racing. I mean, there are a lot of reasons to compare the grammar, if you like, of women's road racing to men's road racing. I mean, you know, there are a lot of similarities, but there are intriguing and subtle differences as well that are in education. You know, I think that when you see riders attack off the front of a bunch, it kind of develops rather than this explosive change, which is, I don't know why that is, but it's kind of fascinating to watch. So it's the same but different. I mean, I think it would be wrong just to say it's the same, because it isn't, you know. So I think we should go into this eyes wide open, understand the battles that women's road racing faces in terms of sponsorship, history, all that kind of thing. But also, you know, the potential different kind of, again, I use the word grammar, that we have to learn about women's road racing, because it's not the same.
I mean, the structure of the teams, for example, out on the road is obviously very different, and the way that they work together. You don't see your lead out chain like you would in the men's
peloton. No, and six rider teams are, again, a bit like in the Tour of Britain men's race, kind of hard to control on these roads. So you don't get that kind of dominant 9-man team. But equally, you get a kind of inbuilt flexibility within the caliber and the capabilities of women riders that's extremely interesting. Like Marianna Vos climbs, time trials, and we've seen it every day now, sprints, you know. And I think it's extremely interesting to see, like, you know, that's what Eddie Merckx used to do. That's what Eddie Merckx used to do.
I always say she's the most of our time.
She is, in a way, isn't she? The cannibal, you know. I mean, and it's a kind of, if you like it, in some respects, she is a throwback to how a halcyon era, albeit very tainted, but the one that in our memory we remember about how, you know, the Tour de France used to be, and how kind of stratified and very specific to certain genres it's become in recent years, and how we all, as cycling fans, appreciate riders, a bit like Peter Sagan, who can kind of bridge the divide, and you look at him and say, well, who is he? What does he do, really? He does a bit of everything. They're the riders we like, you know, so no wonder that the British public has warmed so much to Marianna Vos in particular. But they all, you know, I think Johansson has shown that she's capable of doing that, and Lizzie Armitstead has had a poor tour by her standards. But she's not dissimilar.
Did you have a dark horse for the tour? Someone that you thought might come through as...
No, I didn't, because I mean, I thought that Johansson would have a strong race. I still think that she's the only threat now for Marianne Vos, but I don't think that the race has really caught up with Vos. I mean, Vos is a one-off.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, let's just appreciate
she's
her while
different.
She, let's appreciate her while she's here and while she's stamping on everyone's throats, because that's what she's doing. So it's very, it'd be very hard to have a dark horse when you're up against Marianne Vos.
Sure.
I suppose I shared in Hannah Barnes' delight on stage one that she finished. When did she finish third in the end, didn't she, in that sprint behind Johansson and Vos?
She's seventh in the GC at the moment.
She's still riding high in GC. You know, I think GC's kind of beyond her. I don't imagine she'll be able to improve on that.
Yeah, I mean, speaking
but
to her before...
the fact that she's competitive at these kind of distances and in stage racing is fascinating. And you see how the racing that she's gone off to do in the States and her stage win in Tour de San Luis, she's had two or three wins in really extended high-level crits since then as well, has given her wings. So as a person, she comes across differently now. She seems to be full of self-confidence and brimming with optimism about the years to come, realistic about what she can expect herself to develop into in terms of a rider. But she's certainly heading in the right direction, isn't she?
Definitely. And do you think that the kind of the response that's happened off the back of this and the fact that we've got a stage happening at the Tour de France for the first time in a long time, do you think that's going to help trickle down into grassroots? Do you think it's going to help grow women's cycling from the lower levels?
I hope it does. It's very hard. When you get into these kind of conversations, you're always instantly entering chicken and egg territory, aren't you? Like, what do you got? What comes first? You know. And prior to this race being called into existence, when I was always asked about women's road racing, women's cycling, and why isn't it on the telly, I always used to say, I can't see it getting onto the telly immediately because TV needs to be convinced that there's a spectacle to offer. It needs to be convinced of the quality of the racing, and most of all it needs to be convinced that there'll be a crowd out on the streets to appreciate this, and otherwise there's no spectacle. Mm-hmm. And now I've been completely proven wrong by my own employers, actually, who've you know, to my delight and surprise, taken the first opportunity to give this equal treatment. Almost will be live in a few years, hopefully but it's an hour long highlight show, and that's the one that gets watched,
and it's fantastic.
That's what we do to the Tour de France, that's what we do to the Tour of Britain, that's what we do to the Women's Tour, and I'm really pleased they backed it and slightly stunned. I'd love to see what the viewing figures have been like, and I hope they're credible. I get the sense that they are.
I hear rumours that more people watched it last night than they did the Giro.
But that's something, you know. That's absolutely right. I should imagine, because, and this is where, you know, you have to understand the sort of nuances of the broadcasting landscape, because ITV4 is a free-to-air station accessible to anybody basically in the country now, and so we do expect and we look and we demand a mass audience, and that's why our coverage is sometimes broader in its appeal, and we try and invite people into the sport who may be watching for the first time. Eurosport coverage, I love it to bits, I watch it all the time. It's pretty much there for the initiated. It's a subscription service, you know, and instantly you're talking about much, much fewer numbers of viewers. I mean, that's just in the nature of it. So what that says to me is that the Giro d'Italia are absolute idiots for not seeking out a terrestrial free-to-air broadcast partner. Yeah. Because, let's be realistic, the Giro d'Italia is still bigger than the Friends Life Women's Tour, right?
Yes.
They
obviously
are. We're not. Yeah, but so we shouldn't get carried away with that. Mm. What that says to me is that the Giro d'Italia, if it wants to grow as a race, needs to stop thinking that that's the be-all and end-all. It needs to actively seek out the BBC, Channel 4, or ITV and say...
And it just goes to show that the fans are there and they want to watch it.
Say, here's your race, have it for free. Yeah. Let's grow this all together, you know. That's what they
Fantastic.
Need to do. They need to take a leaf out of Sweet Spot's books and offer these big races to the free-to-air broadcasters. That's how you grow sports. That's how you encourage participation, grassroots. That's how you sustain the future and put down roots.
Fantastic. So coming back to the last two stages of the tour, what do you see happening today and tomorrow?
My ideal scenario would be that, and I don't know actually what's been happening on the road, which is kind of frustrating, so I don't know if anyone's...
As far as I know, Pooley is out on her own with a 22-second lead.
With a 22, all right.
With a small group behind her, and then the peloton about two different places.
What I would like to see and what I think will happen are two different things. I would like to see Rosella Renato pick up some seconds and put herself back into, you know, she's got a podium, is she on the podium?
She is...
In third place.
Yes.
She's in third place. So I wanted to secure that, or at least beef it up, and maybe even threaten Vos and Johansson above her a little bit more, because I think she's been a revelation. And I would like, you know, we've had... Vos winning one sprint, but let's not forget that Johansson beat her in a sprint on stage one. I'd like to see Johansson win on the line and tighten it all up so that we'll have a great big finale where only a couple of seconds are at stake.
Make it that much.
You know,
an exciting finish.
That's what we need. That's what sport's all about. No one likes a 4-0 home win.
I think that's what's made it so exciting, though. Over the past three, four stages, it has been an anyone's race, really.
And even yesterday, when things went, if you like, to their natural order slightly more in FOS1. Even yesterday, the way it happened wasn't quite how we thought it would happen. For a start, we had a mobility scooter that nearly derailed the whole race, which was brilliant, by the way. I love that. But it didn't actually develop in the way that we thought it would, you know. So it was actually kind of edgy seat stuff the whole way, because nothing could get away into that headwind.
Yeah. You know. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Right.
And look forward to seeing it on air more often.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Great, thank you.
No worries.